Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Democratic Perspective is here. Mike Cosentino here. Steve Williamson is traveling the globe somewhere, doing something fun, and so we're going to not care where he is. But we have David Garcia here this morning, former state superintendent of instruction candidate. He is just announced for governor. David Garcia is here. He just spoke to Democrats of the Red Rocks. We have Misha Casebeer here this morning, who is actually sitting in for Steve Williamson, my co-host. And so the three of us are going to talk a little bit to David Garcia. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Misha, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Muy bueno. So tell us, who the hell is David Garcia, by the way?
Who's David Garcia? Good question. I think you may not be alone asking that question right now. As you just mentioned, we announced a launch for governor last week, which is a big step. But
yes, sir.
In some ways, for me, it was a pretty amazing day because I'm a fourth generation Arizonan, born and raised here in Mesa.
You're the one.
And you're the one. And there's a number of us out there.
Yes, there is.
But it was, before I tell you my story, in this book that I keep with me everywhere, I wrote down and I can show it to you. I wrote down, remember that you're a working class kid from Mesa who's running for governor today.
Wow.
And I wrote that down because it's a spirit and an approach toward life that I don't want to forget. I think if I forget that, then I lose a lot of who I am.
Yeah.
But I am born and raised here. My dad was a commercial painter. They worked construction his entire career. Started off in the union and didn't finish his career in the union, which meant for the most part of my life, it was pretty simple. If he worked, he got paid. And if he didn't, he didn't. There was no sick time and vacation and those types of things for him.
Right.
My mom worked at an electronics factory and is working on the line, putting electronics parts together. And I grew up and went to public schools in Mesa. I'm a product of Arizona public schools. I do like to say, because it's an important part of my story, that I was not a good high school student. I was a bad high school student. I hope my daughters do not take after their father in that respect. But the reality was, I was a first-generation student. And when you're a first-generation student, when you're the first in your family to go to school, your world is very, very small. What you think is important is a little tiny circle around you. You don't have the perspective to understand how things like algebra are going to help you later in life.
Right.
And so if it wasn't relevant, I didn't try very hard. And when I finished it at Mesa High School, I'm a jackrabbit, my option was to join the Army. My dad had served, and at 17, I joined the infantry. I turned 18 in basic training. I turned my life around. I knew exactly what I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
I took high school over again. I ended up taking a bunch of classes over again in high school.
I'll be done.
I mean, while I was in the military, because I knew I hadn't learned what I needed to, and came home and hit Arizona State running. I was 19 when I was a freshman, but I had a world of experience behind me. I knew exactly how good I had. I knew exactly how hard I needed to try, and I did much, much better at ASU. My GPA at ASU was quite a few points higher than my high school GPA, and I tell people it was for three reasons. Drill Sergeant Plank, Drill Sergeant Barry, and Drill Sergeant Morales.
Wow.
Those three guys are responsible. And I had the privilege, because I had done well, to study and get a doctorate at the University of Chicago. My wife, by the way, who is an attorney and also went to University of Chicago as well for law school. We used to walk around the quads at Chicago, and I would tell her, do you know the probability of two first-generation kids from Arizona making it to University of Chicago? And she'd go, yeah, I know, you've already told me this story. But it was true. And at that point, you know, we finished up. We had the chance to really live anywhere. But when you're the first in your family to get a chance to do those types of things, to get an education, you come home. and you come home so that you can build and participate and be part of your family and contribute
to
them.
That's, you came home. That's less than, I'm going to say less than half of 1% did what you and your wife did. So that's great. And then you decided to come back here. That's a story not so common. You know, I worked on the Navajo reservation for a while, and we hoped they would come back, but few did. But please tell us some more.
Yeah, no, it is. And when, again, when you're in that position in your family, it's, if they didn't come back, my guess is they were conflicted along the way, because it's a tough decision. But we did come back home again. And since then, I have worked at the state legislature. I was associate superintendent for the state of Arizona for the last 10, 11 years. I have been a professor at ASU in the College of Education, teaching quantitative methods classes, research methods classes, teaching people, helping young students finish their dissertation. My students are now education leaders all over the most of them in the Valley, but there are some in other parts of the state. And I think last and most important today is I'm a public school parent. My wife and I have two daughters who attend public schools in Central Phoenix. And you may know, I think many know, that you just don't go to a public school and take from it. You need to build public schools. That is as...
I don't know that a lot of everybody knows that, by the way, but that's a great line, a great comment, a great observation.
You do, and it goes from volunteering to be a chaperone, if that's your contribution, to, well, maybe stepping up and running for governor because your public schools aren't being honored and treated the way they should be, and not just yours, but public schools all over the state.
So education in David Garcia's mind and in his campaign is central to you've had through your career a close up look at Arizona education. I don't think anybody would argue with the horrible state of Arizona education. Let's talk about for a minute the latest. Let's work backwards here. Let's talk about the new voucher.
Yeah, that's a great question. So you also know, and I ran for superintendent of public instruction in 2014. Another uphill battle, and we came within inches of winning that one. And at that time, I felt like it was the right fight for me, a great place for me to be. I'd been at the department before, and an opportunity for me to do what I'm really committed to, which is improving public education in Arizona. However, a couple weeks ago, Doug Ducey not only signed, but he pushed for the passage of a universal voucher bill. And at that point, I realized that my fight wasn't to become superintendent anymore. My fight was at the governor's office. And as a public school parent, and we don't think about it this way, but here's how I think about it. You know, it's kind of funny because at the legislature, if you have taken your voucher and left the public school system, we call you a chooser. But the reality is 95% of our parents are in traditional public or charter schools, and they are choosers too. See, my wife and I could send our daughters to any school we want to.
Sure, yeah.
And we are choosing to be in a public school. And I don't think we look at it that way. There are hundreds and thousands of parents who are making the choice to send their children to public schools. And what angered me most was this bill did not do anything. It hurt the choice of 95% of our public school parents. And on top of that, on the heels of 1-2-3, on the heels of Governor Ducey, Doug Ducey, turning to the public and asking for some trust to pass 1-2-3 on the idea that step four and beyond would be the beginning of building our public schools, I felt betrayed. I felt like as a parent you were betraying my trust if step four was to be was universal vouchers.
So just to frame that quickly, the support through this recently signed, the governor signed voucher program means less money for the public schools where the vast majority of Arizona students are.
True. And so the question is, if you're a public school parent, if you are in a traditional public school or a charter school, or if you love somebody who is in, the question is, what are you doing for our choice? What are you doing to help our choice? Look, we had an insult to injury when we are at the bottom of for spending in public education in Arizona, and then take more money away from the system. And what I find really most discouraging is we've sort of learned to live with that condition in Arizona.
Unfortunately.
And that means somebody's paying a price. And who's paying the price are, A, our teachers. Our teachers are scrapping together to try to make a living and keep their classes going and stay in Arizona, stay in the profession. I think it's our families, by the way, who are doing much the same thing in order for their students to get a good education. And last, I think we're robbing our students of opportunities.
That's for sure.
I'm here because my mom had a quality public school to walk me to when I was little. And I believe that we have forgotten how important that action is in terms of giving students and their families opportunities.
The name of the show is Democratic Perspective, but we don't pretend, by the way, David, to be bipartisan here. We are a partisan show, by the way, which I am happy to announce nearly every week, and that we are here this morning to fully support what I'm hearing you say about Arizona education and about Arizona politics. The open corruption of the Arizona legislature regarding, which once again hinges on education to some degree. There may be others, but Senator Yarbrough and maybe others that profit from the money, the state money, the public money, the tax money that goes to charter schools. What's that about, man?
That's a heck of a question. Yeah, I find it interesting that the Republican Party, who often stands on sort of a pedestal of good government, would allow for our legislative, our elected officials to be in a position to vote on bills that are going to directly benefit them financially. And for those folks to get reelected, for those folks to be in leadership positions, I just find unconscionable. As a citizen of Arizona, I can't understand how we'd allow people to get elected with those kinds of just blatant conflicts of interest. You know, we've also got the same situation with the governor as well.
Get specific for a minute.
Sure.
On how does he make money?
Well, so we have what are called school tuition organizations where tax credits can go to school tuition organizations that are intended to then go to students to attend private schools. And those school tuition organizations are regulated and laws are made about how much can come in. And the rules and regulations around school tuition organizations are really dictated by the legislature.
Okay.
And Steve Yarbrough is an executive, I don't know exactly his position, in a school tuition organization.
Right.
And so he's in the position to make decisions at the legislature that directly impact the bottom line of a school tuition organization from which he gets paid.
What about Ducey?
Yeah, Ducey's an interesting case. You know, this is a gentleman who came in talking about business, government running to the speed of business.
Yeah.
He did that the first session. He hasn't said it since because a lot of things passed that first session that I think folks realized there needs to be some deliberate discussion if our ideas are gonna be solid. We also have a gentleman who has five of his top aides have been either removed or under some kind of investigation. I don't find that to be solid management at the state level as well.
Yeah.
And we're looking at somebody who really is getting too many ideas and too much investment from outside of Arizona.
Yeah.
I mean, let's go back to the voucher bill. I don't know of a single parent who has turned to me, and I'm talking education a lot, that says, you know what we need? We need universal vouchers.
Yeah.
That idea came from outside of Arizona.
That's very true.
And just to show what I mean by that, I don't know of a single parent who has tweeted Doug Ducey and said, hey, thank you very much, congratulations. But Betsy DeVos did. And I think that speaks volumes to with the interest group around this issue and really who it's serving at the end of the day.
How do you engage the voters in 2018 when there's so much disgust with the political process?
How do you engage the voters? Well, first off, I believe one of the things I think is interesting is you mentioned engagement. And I think the key going forward in 2018 is exactly that. It's engagement. And it's because people at some point just get sick and tired of the process. Here's my personal opinion. My personal opinion is I don't think all the negative advertising changes anybody's mind. I do think it turns them off to the process. They get tired of it. I heard it both before 16 and before 14. People just want it to end. And what happens is they get disengaged.
Without a doubt.
And who are the folks the first to get disengaged are our marginalized populations. The first to get disengaged are those people who are, you know, just on the cusp of participating. They throw their hands up first. And as a result, the voting population doesn't look like Arizona's population by and large. And our own folks, some of our own communities who would benefit the most from seeing myself and other Democrats win, they disengage from the process. And so going forward in 2018, really it's about who can maintain energy and engagement and connection all the way through November so that all of our communities across the state who have a vested interest, not just in the Democratic Party, but in the ideals that the Democratic Party holds, and central to that is public education, by the way. How do you keep them engaged through this entire process so that they stay with you, through November? This is not also an urban or a rural issue. And what I always find interesting when I get out to rural Arizona is this is a part of the state that depends heavily, almost exclusively on public education and on their public schools. And 95% of what is discussed in Phoenix has nothing, very little to do with improving rural education. And I think that needs to change.
Before the show, we were talking about running. We were talking about your last attempt at superintendent of public instruction and coming very close in the kind of support that you got. Being in close to politics on this show and in my personal life, I know it's all about, and I hate to say it, it's all about money. It's not all about. Okay, I back off of that a little bit. But it's a lot about money. Can you win?
Yes.
Okay. Next question.
You don't jump into this. You don't drag your family into this.
Okay.
And you don't put yourself in a position to take the hits that you surely know are coming if you don't believe you're going to win. Now, is it a long road? Yeah, absolutely. there is no question about that. And like I told the group this morning, what I think is helpful and what I believe is important about my story is as we go down this road together and as the obstacles get thrown in our way, I wanted them to know what motivates me. And I told them this morning, and I believe it, it is in order to come from a working class background to get to the University of Chicago and be in a legitimate position to run for governor, you face some long odds. And that's just not me, by the way. This is a message to every student out there and every family out there who's facing their own long odds. And in order to get there, you face those long odds and you get over those hurdles. And we're in that exact same situation here. There is no candidate on the Democratic side who can make the phone calls and get the hold of the deep pockets that we know are coming from Doug Ducey on the other side. So the question is, how do you counteract that? How do you put together a campaign that is a completely different narrative, not about deep pockets, but about people? I believe that we may not have the deep pockets, but we got the people. And we did this very well in our 2014 campaign, by the way. We had
That's good to hear.
So many people out volunteering, knocking on doors, and working hard. That campaign, which in retrospect, looks a lot. Got to remember that we're fifth down in the state offices. I think treasurer might come before superintendent.
Yeah, I think so.
What that's called is a down ballot race, and people call it a down ballot race.
Yeah.
Because what that means is the further down ballot you go, the more challenges you have. You have more challenges with raising money. You have more challenges with recognition.
Right.
You have more challenges with resources. And one thing that is clear is for a down-ballot race, we ran a heck of a campaign last time. Mm-hmm. We did have people coming out who were volunteering and who worked very, very hard. We had more volunteers, not paid, but volunteers knocking on doors than any other campaign. We're going to need that exact same energy to change the narrative, because what needs to change in Arizona is the narrative that you just mentioned, which is deep pockets and big money win every time.
Yep.
When that changes, when we convince people that it's possible and they see my campaign out on a big way, in a big way, that's when we take Arizona and transform it in some ways that are going to be very, very productive and helpful to a lot of regular people who in Arizona need help and are looking for the state, particularly in education, to be part of that.
I do want to let listeners know that you did speak at Democrats of the Red Rocks this morning, breakfast at Old Sedona Bar and Grill. An enthusiastic crowd, by the way. And we also want to let people know that Steve Segner over at El Portal, a little boutique hotel, is a big supporter of the show. And so we give him a shout out. We want to mention Democrats at Red Rocks are also. And when I say supporter, I'm talking about financially and emotionally and spiritually. They support the show, and we want to thank them. Let's talk about something that you didn't talk about this morning, David Garcia, the Trump effect. We're starting to see, at least what I see in my news feed, are tracking these special elections and that the Democrats are doing very well in solidly Republican districts. I know it's a long time. It's a 2018 is both long and not long from now. Is there going to be a Trump effect for you?
Let me rephrase that just a little bit. Look, it is no exaggeration to say we are living in historic times. And I'm not one to say those types of things, that kind of hyperbole easily. But whether we like it or not, we can pick up our phones right now and something historic is happening. We may not agree with it. It may not be something that we like in terms of the direction of our country, but those kinds of historic events are happening. Now, given that, I believe something equally historic is going to happen in 2018, too. I don't believe that coming off of what we've seen so far, that 2018 is going to be flat. And so what we really don't know well, because we haven't seen it in a number of years in Arizona, is what a historic voter turnout looks like in an off-year election. We have no idea what that looks like. We've become accustomed, just like you had mentioned earlier about big money winning every time, we've become accustomed to saying, it's an off year, Democrats don't come out. I think that's going to change. And turnout is another way of talking about engagement is the key.
That is the key.
That is the key. Can we get folks out? And this morning, as part of our conversation, I had a great time because I was learning and getting all kinds of wonderful ideas from committed folks about how we do exactly that. And the way to do it is we've got to go out and connect with people who weren't in the room this morning. Right? The folks in the room are ready. They're going to jump on board. They're going to be helpful. But the question is, how do we get to communities, how do we get to families who were not in the room to keep them engaged so that they come out in 2018? I believe the energy is there. I should tell you, I get emails. So, you know, the way the campaign season works is usually at last 9 months or so, you're out almost every single night talking
right.
to a group.
Right.
I could fill most weekday nights right now talking to a group somewhere.
Right.
Because whether if you're out there listening and you're thinking, or you have one of these groups or you're thinking about this, there's 100 people meeting an anthem, for example, on a Tuesday night who are ready to get involved that weren't there before.
Right.
75 people out in Surprise, a huddle group of 60 people in Scottsdale. There is this energy and this momentum out there that I believe is a groundswell and I do believe is going to be part of changing the narrative in 2018.
I'm certainly seeing a lot, like you, I hope it lasts. But as I said before on Democratic Perspective, and I'm going to tell David Garcia, he's here to give information, but as he was there this morning to get information, whether it's David Garcia's campaign, whether it's Democrats at Red Rocks, whether it's Maricopa County, blah, blah, or a huddle, or Indivisible, it's all about get out the vote. It's all about getting people to vote, especially on our side. Because as you just said, what happens is they make it so difficult or so ugly and so negative that you stay home. You say, who wants to be involved in this kind of
horror? Who wants to be associated with that?
Exactly.
Who wants to be associated with it? One of the things you saw this morning, I hope, is you saw some energy. And
yeah. Oh,
you
yeah.
saw somebody who, look, we got a couple choices. I think this is just solid advice in life. Okay, so here's David Garcia's big life advice for you. You know, you sometimes people run from things and sometimes people run to things. And I believe when you're running from something, chances are it's probably not a good decision. And a lot of times in politics, it gets so nasty, or we painted the other side so badly we're running from something. We did this last time in 2014. I wouldn't have run had I not had a vision that people could go to. And that to me has always been the better decision in my life. And it's one that people get motivated and get behind and stay with. Because once you run from something, you leave it behind you and you just drop it.
Sure.
But when you're going toward something, when you're running to something, it's ahead of you and you're reaching toward it and you're continuing to work toward that goal, whatever that happens to be. And I believe that we've got a number of issues on the Democratic side that people can run to. And of those issues, and helping out working class families has always been a top issue for Democrats. That's one that people can run to. You don't just leave that behind. You continue to aspire to it.
Exactly. We're going to talk about, I'm talking to David Garcia, a possible candidate for governor, former candidate for state superintendent of public instruction here in Arizona, Arizona native. We did talk a little bit before the show about talking about, you know, this kind of show is mostly the David Garcia show. Well, we're going to find out a little bit about him in the time we have. But I do want to talk about one issue close to my heart. Is David Garcia done any thinking about the ACA?
That's a great
Affordable Care Act.
We have, yeah, ACA, absolutely. And you know, part of the challenge right now, and I was just asked this question the other day: what are you going to do about the federal, what the feds are doing with the Affordable Care Act? My answer is, what are they doing with the Affordable Care Act right now? I think this is a circumstance where they jumped in, and actually, this is a fantastic example. Look, what happened was people voted to run away from the Affordable Care Act. Right?
That's the analogy. That's right.
We don't know where we're going.
It's perfect.
We just know we do not want that. Now, like the dog chasing the car, you caught it. And the answer is, where are we going to next? That's a harder question to answer. And we're finding that out at the federal level.
Amisha, how many Arizonans lose health care if ACA is repealed?
I believe it's 709,000.
That's what she's here for.
And so how do you run to a policy where over 700,000 of Arizonans are going to lose health care?
Exactly.
And so I believe that it's going to be taken up again. It has to be taken up again. Let me tell you where my value system is.
Yes.
At the end of the day here is. Look, I just think that ultimately so much centers around education, but it's not just what happens in the classroom. What happens in communities in terms of crime, in terms of enforcement, in terms of health care, nutrition, economic policy, I see as all education issues, because it is those external conditions that get our families in a position to be stable, get our families in a position to have the time and energy and focus so that their children can get into classrooms. I did have the privilege to go to with Finland and spent some time looking at their education system. And of the many things I found to be really amazing, one of them was how they looked at public policy. They didn't segment it the way we did here. So in other words, we've got a health committee that looks at issues just as health, or we've got education that looks at education, et cetera. They took on issues that were social. We would have seen them as social issues. Things like family stability. Actually, there was an issue with men, fathers drinking too much in the wintertime and how they're going to. But they walked out and they said, we have an education problem. Wasn't a social issue. Wasn't a family issue. It was an education problem.
Excellent.
Because if families weren't in a position to get their students ready for school, then that became the issue.
Right.
I had the privilege. Right. I had worked with somebody in Phoenix who was trying to work on owner-occupied housing and trying to keep families who had been in, you know, really tenuous mortgages to stay in their homes.
Right.
And she and I got down and we talked a little bit. And I was giving her some ideas. And I said, you have an education problem here. Because if a family has to get up and move because of a mortgage that, you know, is not untenable for them, that they can't pay off, then their child has to switch schools. And when their child switches schools and they're chasing rent, then the likelihood of that child doing something well or finishing their education drops incredibly. Let's rewrite this. You should rewrite this as an education problem. not a housing problem.
Yeah, very true. One of the reasons the Republicans have been so successful at slashing education, billions out of Arizona education, at least $4 billion, is that is what a percentage of the budget it was. Back in 98, 99, they had it, and it was true. It was, they had slashed all the other programs, so education kept becoming a higher percent of the budget. So when you got something that's, you know, 55, 54% of the whole state budget, that becomes a target. Sure. And so it became a great target for them to be slashing since the late 90s. But when you look at it, as David Garcia looks at it, that it is so central to all these other social issues, to all these other economic issues, as some of your corporate supporters do wisely, they're saying that Arizona's reputation, Arizona's schools are not helping us out at all, and which is damaging their economic interests and the economic vitality of the whole state. So
Let me go back to the slashing for a second.
Please.
They didn't just slash. What they did is they shifted the burden. See, what's happened is as the state has slashed, local communities have had to go out for more bonds and overrides. And when I get a chance to talk to a parent group who's gathering on a Saturday to go get a bond or an override passed, what I like to tell them is, let me remind you, A, this is hard work. If it was easy to go ask your neighbors to support your public school, the legislature would be doing it. But you are here on a Saturday morning taking your time because your elected officials are not doing their job. That's why you're here. Right? And in some ways, they're in a catch-22, because if they pass the local bond and override, it actually buffers. It actually insulates the impact of the decision at the state level. But that's been just simply a shift. It's been a shift to local parents, our same working class parents who are out trying to make ends meet, who now, on top of everything else they've got to do, got to get out there on Saturday to make sure that they've got smaller class sizes in their school and in their school district.
Exactly. If you talk to, you call ASBO tomorrow, the Arizona School Business Officials Association, they will tell you that at any given time, anywhere from 70 to 90% of Arizona schools operate under an override budget. And that's they like to remain non-political, as they should, but business managers and comptrollers and all these names that the financial people within school districts have, they know really, really well where the monies haven't to be made up.
What that means is that there are parents, local communities.
That's right.
Are the ones out there fighting this. They're the ones that are making up that difference. And the way I see it is, at least for the short time being, they've got to continue to do that. I get that. But some of that same energy needs to be put to changing your elected officials as well. That's going to help you as much as going out and knocking on doors for your own local bond and overrides if you change folks in the leadership position.
Where can people get more David Garcia?
More David Garcia. Well, hopefully you can see a lot more David Garcia going forward.
Where can they get more if they want?
There's a website.
Yes. Yeah.
You can find us at DG, the number 4AZ.com. You can find us at DG4AZ on Facebook, DG4AZ on Twitter. Facebook is where we post events. So the next time I'm up here or in Flagstaff or in Prescott, that's where you'll know then. And I invite people, particularly if you're sitting out there listening and have not been to an event, come by and listen. And I think if you get a chance to walk in the room, learn a little bit about me and about the direction we're going, I'm convinced you're going to jump on board.
All right. Very good. David, where to from here? What's going on in Flagstaff?
Headed from here to have lunch with the Coconino County Democratic Party from here. So I'm going to get a chance to meet with some good folks there in Flagstaff. And like I said, it's been busier than last time for sure, even before this announcement, back to Phoenix for an event tonight. I spend a little time either tomorrow or Tuesday on Spanish radio and Spanish television. That's another important outreach that we can do in our committee.
Yeah, we've avoided that in this discussion. But yeah, your last name's Garcia. Cosentino, we can get away with stuff, but a Latino name, the question is going to come. It's always under the surface, so let's bring it to the surface. There are people that are especially in these times. there's been a certain amount of fear whipped up, I guess. And so I don't know where to go here. What do you want to say about the Garcia part of David Garcia?
First, I appreciate you asking, because I would rather people ask and you get a chance to address it than keep it under the surface. Because when it stays under the surface, I think it festers under there, and it shouldn't. Last time I ran, you know, we got some questions about whether or not I was born here. Time I ran, we got folks just flat out told me, you're crazy running in this state with that last
fourth name. Generation Arizona, by the way. We want to mention that.
And
the border moved across you.
And from some of my family, question. And I think it's unfortunate that you have to face those questions when your last name's Garcia, but I get that it's a reality. What I think is most important is that we have leadership that reflects our state. And that is beyond just a last name, Garcia. These are people that also live and go to schools in the same school that you do, people that you can relate to. I think that's centrally important. A very important component of Arizona going forward is our Latino community. And our Latino community is, especially if you are, by the way, in K-12, minorities are the majority
today. That's right.
If you add up all minority categories. And so what I think is time is we need folks who reflect the community. And if that means having a Latino governor, then I think that's an important part of it. You think about it. We have not had a Latino governor. We have not had a Latino elected in statewide office in over 40 years in Arizona.
Wow.
And not since Raul Castro, who was at 74, who, if you think about it, an amazing story, he ran out of Tucson and won in 74.
Raul
out of
Castro,
Tucson. Yeah. I had the real privilege of meeting him as part of our last campaign. He endorsed us for superintendent of public instruction.
Wow.
He told me then, same thing I'm hearing now, which is we've got to get our own people out. And I think that truly, if this is an issue we got to take on, we'll take it on. But I think we're ready. And I think as a state, we're ready for leadership that reflects the reflects
traditionally
the
Democrats come out of Tucson, the Pima County area. But we like to think that things, as you mentioned, these are strange times, and that there are as many supporters for your candidacy or a candidacy like yours. They're everywhere now. They're not just located in Coconino County or Pima County. We talk about numbers. We talk about getting elected, and the Arizona Democratic Party in Phoenix has some great numbers crunchers, and they'll hopefully lend you some of that knowledge in the coming months and year or so to in the run up to the election to where you could be most effective. There's nothing wrong with speaking to the clubs that already support you. You know, we need the cheerleaders, or the cheering on, I guess, to remain focused. But you got a lot of people that you have to reach that need to get to know David Garcia.
No question. This is helpful.
In 2014, you had the support of some GOP folks that were really helpful to your campaign. For example, Jaime Molera was the former Republican superintendent of public instruction and came out in strong support of you at that time. Do you have a strategy for reaching out to GOP support this time?
Certainly. We will absolutely reach out GOP support to the extent that they're ready to jump on board. And I think that our primary issue is, public education, the state of public education, is not a party issue.
Right.
We've got fantastic schools in red areas. We've got schools that are in need, particularly in rural Arizona, that are in largely red areas. This is an issue that transcends party. And Jaime and others who also endorsed us last time, these are folks who I've worked with before. And, when working with them, and I have worked at the legislature, worked with a number of Republicans, and when I was working with folks, even though we were on the other side of issues, I never felt like I always felt like they still had the best interest of Arizona in mind. We may not agree on the direction, but I didn't see the idea of sort of tearing down Arizona and starving Arizona that I see a lot of today. And as a person who spends their expertise in policy and in quantitative analysis, we helped each other out. We're certainly going to do that. I think it's going to be a little tougher this time around. I recognize that. But I believe not just elected officials, but I think folks who are interested in the future of Arizona and care about the direction for our students and our families, regardless of party, I think we're going to have a good opportunity to communicate with them, and they're going to find something that that they can relate to in our campaign.
Well, I mentioned that David Garcia is a professor at ASU, education professor, but in what we consider the nuts and bolts, and certainly haven't taken education courses, and I know Misha has too. This was the one that scared the crap out of us. But for him, it's a piece of cake and an easy one. So he's intimately involved in millennials and in education, two things that people believe you need to be able to work with and know something about in order to win in Arizona. The education has become, rather than smaller, you know, people thought 1-2-3 was going to, the Proposition 1-2-3 that was promoted so heavily by the governor and his minions was supposed to be the answer. Many people saw right through it and saw it wasn't, but it passed narrowly. And so education has not gotten off the front burner. If anything else, it has been turned up. And as David Garcia just mentioned, it is central to so many things in Arizona because so many people are involved. One of the things we did talk about this morning was how long a student, the social issues that we dealt with. I haven't been in a high school class since 2004. I haven't been in a college classroom as an instructor since 2013. But the social issues were enormous that teachers deal with. And it comes out in classrooms, by the way, folks. They're not these discrete little things where you talk about, you know, writing compositions or knowing what matters in algebra. There are always these human. There is no more human endeavor than education, I think. Perhaps, except actual direct social work. What about some of these things? Where are we with supporting education and some of the? And where have you been lately? That means that, is there any bright spot here? Is there any? I'm thrashing about here because I'm looking for something else. Hopeful we can end with.
So it's interesting because you had mentioned working with students and millennials.
Yes.
Look, I get the privilege of working with young people who are interested and interesting every day as a professor. And that always gives you hope. These are young people that see the world differently, that do not have barriers and blind spots in the ways that maybe other parts of our society do. And it's what happens in the classroom, but it's truly what happens outside the classroom. See, because I believe that students don't learn in the classroom. They learn outside the classroom. Students don't learn that life's inequitable.
Absolutely.
They don't learn about inequities
Absolutely.
Inside the classroom. They don't learn, they don't learn about the birds and bees in the classroom.
Yeah.
But they go to school to understand those issues. And they learn them elsewhere. All the life lessons that I can think of, I learned outside of school. And then I went into a classroom to understand why the world was that way.
You're stealing my opening day speech. You learn much. The interesting stuff happens outside the classroom, and that's for sure. So David Garcia, exploring the state of Arizona and some of his reasons for being governor, looking at his governorship, had a really close race for superintendent of public instruction. It's hard for some of us to believe the differences in the candidates are so huge, so strong. In other words, had David won last time, we would be, what a different world we would be in. This is just beyond the pale of the. So elections matter, folks. Elections matter so much now. It used to be, and I say this almost every show too, that the reason has a liberal bias. The name of the show is Democratic Perspective. It's because we believe that educating people and paying for it and feeding old people and giving people, young people, lunches and all these things are important. But we want to today we're supporting the candidacy of David Garcia. You can find out more about him at DG4@AZ.com. DG, letters DG, number 4, AZ, at AZ, excuse me, AZ.com. You can find this show and all our shows on VVID.org. Our podcasts are on VVID.org. Democratic Perspective. Thank you, folks.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday